Good morning. I'd like to call the opening of the biz meeting to order. The first order of business, letter of notification. Gentlemen, certified proofs of publication have been received in the Office of Mineral Resources on behalf of the State Mineral and Energy Board for the State of Louisiana, from the Advocate Official Journal for the State of Louisiana, and from the respective parish journals, as evidence that tract numbers 42204 through 42243 have been advertised in accordance with and under provisions of Chapter 2, Title 30 of the Revised Statutes of 1950 as amended. Letters of protest. We have two letters of protest. On track number 42217, we had a letter of protest from Edward Weisner, Donation Advisory Committee, dated July 18, 2011. And on 42243, we had a letter of protest from Miami Corporation, dated July 5th, 2011. The staff has reviewed these protests, and the tracks will remain up. There are claimable water bottles within the tracks. Notification of any tracks to be withdrawn today. Track number 42211 will be recommended to be withdrawn from today's sale, and it will be taken up in the nomination and track committee meeting. If there were any bids received on this track, they will be returned unopened at the conclusion of today's board meeting. And we will proceed with opening of the bids.
Good morning. There were no bids on tracks 42204 through 42207. There was one bid on track 42208, advertised as 14 acres. The bid is for the entire tract. The bidder is Matador Resources Company. Matador Resources Company. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $112,520.10. $112,520.10. Or per acre value of $8,037.15. Annual rentals are $56,260.05. $56,260.05. Royalties are 25%. There was one bid on track 42209, advertised as 20 acres. The bid is for the entire tract. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years with a cash payment of $180,000. $180,000. Or a per acre value of $9,000. Annual rentals are $90,000. $90,000. Royalties are 25%. There were three bids on track 42210, advertised as 86 acres. The first bid is for the entire tract. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years with a cash payment of $21,630.72. $21,630.72. Or a per acre value of $251.52. Annual rentals are $10,815.36. $10,815.36. Royalties are 22.5%. The second bid is for a portion containing 5 acres. The bidder is Bellard and Company Incorporated. Bellard and Company Incorporated. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $1,265. $1,265. Or a per acre value of $253. Annual rentals are $632.50. $632.50. Royalties are 25.5%. Third bid for tract 42210 is a portion containing 5 acres. The bidder is Arsenault Land Services Incorporated. Arsenault Land Services Incorporated. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment in the amount of $1,515. $1,515. Or a per acre value of $303. Annual rentals are $757.50. $757.50. Royalties are 22.5%. It will be recommended that tract 42211 be withdrawn from today's lease sale. Any bids will be returned. There was one bid on tract 42212, advertised as 63 acres. The bid is for the entire tract. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment in the amount of $15,971.76. $15,971.76. Or a per acre value of $253.52. Annual rentals are $7,985.88. $7,985.88. Royalties are 22.5%. There was one bid on track 42213, advertised as 450.822 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Basin Properties Incorporated. Basin Properties Incorporated. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $91,751.30. $91,751.30. Or a per acre value of $203.52. Annual rentals are $45,875.65. $45,875.65. Royalties are 22.5%. There was one bid on track 42214, advertised as 1,199 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 12 acres. The bidder is Somerville Partners, L.P. Somerville Partners, L.P. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $2,712. $2,712. Or a per acre value of $226. Annual rentals are $1,356. $1,356. Royalties are 21.5%. There were no bids on tracks 42215 through 42218. There was one bid on track 42219, advertised as 2,285 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 124.45 acres. The bidder is Mach Energy, LLC. Mach Energy, LLC. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years with a cash payment of $24,890. $24,890. Or a per acre value of $200. Annual rentals are $12,445. $12,445. Royalties are 21%. There were no bids on tracks 42220 through 42223. There was one bid on track 42224. Advertised as 1,918.73 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 277.69 acres. The bidder is Westgrove Energy Holdings, LLC. Westgrove Energy Holdings, LLC. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years with a cash payment of $64,146.39. $64,146.39. Or a per acre value of $231. Annual rentals are $32,073.20. $32,073.20. Royalties are 21%. There was one bid on track 42225, advertised as 1.92 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Dimension Energy CB, LLC. Dimension Energy CB, LLC. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years with a cash payment of $2,000.01. $2,000.01. Or a per acre value of $1,041.67. Annual rentals are $1,000. $1,000. Royalties are 25%. There were no bids on track 42226. Or 42227. There was one bid on track 42228, advertised as 1,633 acres. 1,633 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 94 acres. The bidder is K Exploration Company. K Exploration Company. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years. With a cash payment of $21,338. $21,338. Or a per acre value of $227. Annual rentals are $10,669. $10,669. Royalties are 22%. There were no bids on track 42229. There was one bid on track 42230, advertised as 343.56 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Basin Properties Incorporated. Basin Properties Incorporated. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years. With a cash payment of $69,921.34. $69,921.34. Or a per acre value of $203.52. Annual rentals are $34,960.67. $34,960.67. Royalties are 22.5%. There was one bid on track 42231, advertised as 974.491 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 159.5 acres. The bidder is Somerville Partners, L.P. Somerville Partners, L.P. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $36,047. $36,047, or a per acre value of $226. Annual rentals are $18,023.50. $18,023.50. Royalties are 21.5%. There was one bid on track 42232, advertised as 5 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Jordan Oil Company Incorporated. Jordan Oil Company Incorporated. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $1,000. $1,000. Or a per acre value of $200. Annual rentals are $1,000. $1,000. Royalties are 1/5. There were no bids on track 42233 through 42238. There was one bid on track 42239. Advertised as 40 acres. The bid is for the entire tract. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $6,000. $6,000. Or a per acre value of $150. Annual rentals are $3,000. $3,000. Royalties are 18.75%. There was one bid on track 42240, advertised as 10 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $2,535.20. $2,535.20, or a per acre value of $253.52. Annual rentals are $1,267.60. $1,267.60. Royalties are 22.5%. There was one bid on track 42241, advertised as 41.82 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years, with a cash payment of $10,602.21. $10,602.21. Or per acre value of $253.52. Annual rentals are $5,301.10. $5,301.10. Royalties are 22.5%. There was one bid on track 42242, advertised as 18 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, LP. The bid is for a primary term of 3 years with a cash payment of $4,563.36. $4,563.36. Or per acre value of $253.52. Annual rentals are $2,281.68. $2,281.68. Royalties are 22.5%. There was one bid on track 42243, advertised as 3,205 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Zenergy Incorporated. Zenergy Incorporated. The bid is for primary term of 2 years with a cash payment of $137,174. $137,174, or per acre value of $42.80. There are no rentals or royalties on this bid. Yes. Yeah. The additional consideration is as follows. EGA bid includes additional considerations clauses as per the attached. Both of these clauses will substitute for Articles 6 and 8 as stipulated already within the contract per discussions between Clayton Johnson and Rick Heck. And the reason. Substitution for Article 6. Grantee will deliver a copy of any final pre-stack time migration obtained covering any portion of the EGA to the OMR within 30 days of receipt from the processor. The data delivered will be no less than the actual data set acquired within the defined EGA. Grantee will attempt to obtain the permission of the offsetting mineral owners who have granted seismic permits so as to allow the delivery of additional PSTM data covering a 1/2 mile halo around the defined EGA. If grantee reprocesses the seismic data acquired within 5 years of the date of the end of the agreement period, grantee shall deliver a copy of the final pre-stack time migration to the OMR within 30 days of receipt from the processor, covering the same area as covered by the original data delivered. It shall be the responsibility of the grantee to keep OMR informed and in a timely manner of all phases of ongoing operations, including commencement and completion of data acquisition, processing, reprocessing, and other schedules of activities affecting the final processed seismic data. Failure to provide OMR with information and in a manner as set forth herein shall place grantee in default under the terms of this contract. Grantee shall be liable to the OMR for an amount equal to the original seismic fee, same being the exclusive remedy of the OMR as stipulated in Article 8. Except for this document, including other associated documents and the accompanying plat, all information, maps, plats, and other data provided to the OMR hereunder shall be confidential and an exception to the provisions of public record laws and shall not be released to any other agency or entity absent a valid court order from a court of competent jurisdiction or absent written permission from the owner of the data. Substitution for Article 8. If grantee does not secure the full and complete acquisition of data under the 3D or other more advanced geophysical and geological program contemplated under this exclusive geophysical agreement number 2, covering substantially the entire geographical area within the boundaries of the area covered by this agreement, grantee shall be liable to the board as the exclusive remedy of the board for a monetary amount equal to the seismic fee for this agreement, which amount shall be payable in full within 30 days of the occurrence of the default. Payment of said default shall relieve grantee of its obligation under the agreement to conduct a 3D seismic survey and other more advanced seismic surveys on the property. That was the last bid, and that concludes today's lease sale. What did I say? Concludes the reading of the bid. Yeah, it was a
I'd like to apologize for the security measures that we've had to implement. We've had some circumstances that led us to believe that it was a necessary measure, and we really appreciate everyone's cooperation.
Good morning. The Lease Review Committee will now be called into session. The roll call, Mr. Angel,
here.
Mr. Segura,
here.
Mr. Arnold,
here.
Mr. Cordero,
here.
Mr. Diaz, Mr. Ingram,
here.
Mr. Martin,
here.
Mr. Sanders, Mrs. Smith, and Mr. Graves. We have a quorum. I hereby convene the Lease Review Committee meeting. Mr. Talbert, would you please present the agenda?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Chairman Smith, members of the board, I'm here to present the lease review agenda today. All the board members should have a binder containing information related to this agenda. Let's start with how many active leases there are. 1,846 active leases covering nearly 841,000 acres. The G&E staff reviewed since the last board meeting some 190 leases covering 57,000 acres. Of the 190 leases, there's only one lease to discuss in more detail today. That lease being State Lease 328-A at Bay Baptiste Field. Hillcorp Energy is the lessee. The committee last reviewed this lease on May 11, 2011. The board adopted the committee's recommendation to grant Hillcorp until July 13, 2011 to finalize the second 349-acre parcel release, and they be granted until October 12, 2011 to restore the lease to production or release additional acreage. By email dated June 29, 2011, Hillcorp notified the staff of their intention to release a second 349 acres. Attached to the email was a draft partial release prepared to be circulated and executed upon the staff's approval. Therefore, the staff recommends accepting the partial release. Any questions? And that's it for my part. Mr. Bradbury will give an update on Force Mutual.
Good morning, Chairman Smith, members of the board. From the Force Mutual list, if you can remember from last month, we've removed a few more properties. We only have five left that are still affected by the flooding. One item that I need to bring up and request the board's approval on is Harvest has notified us they need more time to finish legal negotiations or the attainment of a new platform for their production for operating agreement A0311. So the staff is requesting that we extend recognition of the force majeure for 3 months to the November 9th, 2011 board meeting. And, you know, that's it.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the board? Any public comment at this time? I need a motion and a second.
Second.
To accept and approve all reports and recommendations by the staff, I have a motion from Mr. Dave Ingram and a second one from Mr. Tom Arnold. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I need a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting. I have a motion from Mr. Ingram and a second from Mr. Tom Arnold. Police Review Committee is now adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to call to order the Nomination and Track Evaluation Committee meeting. This time we'll have a roll call. Mr. Angel, Mr. Segura, Mr. Arnold, Mr. Diaz, Mr. Ingram, Mr. Morton, Mr. Sanders, Mr. Smith, Mrs. Smith, Garrett Graves. We have a quorum. Good morning, Ms. Fontenot.
Morning, Mr. Cordero, ladies and gentlemen. Previous approval by the board was granted to the staff to process and advertise 40 tracts in the journals of the state and in the official journals of the parish where the lands are located for today's lease sale. Received a letter of protest from Miami Corporation dated July the 5th, 2011, pertaining to tract 42243, situated in St. Mary Parish, Louisiana. We also received a letter of protest from Edward Wiesner Donation Advisory Committee, dated July the 18th, 2011, pertaining to tract 42217, situated in Jefferson Parish, Louisiana. The staff reviewed the most recent state land water bottoms layer and determined that tracts 42243 and 42217 contains claimable water bottoms. Therefore, the tracts were advertised correctly and are to be left up for today's lease sale. The next item we are requesting to withdraw tract 42211, tract 42211 in St. Landry Parish, Louisiana. What's happened here is that subsequent to the advertisement of this tract, the Office of Mineral Resources received notice from the State Land Office that a portion of Bayou Jack advertised for today's lease sale was not claimable. This was a result of an independent study whereby the State Land Office concurred in the findings. The applicant has been notified of today's proposed action. The tract was initially advertised as 71 acres and should be re-advertised as 38 acres more or less. The staff recommends to withdraw said tract and be given the authority to re-advertise it with the proper claimable water bottoms for an upcoming lease sale.
Okay, I need a motion and second to accept the staff recommendation. Motion by Mr. Arnold. Second by Mr. Smith. Is there any public comment on this item? Any comment from the committee? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion passes.
42 nominations received at the Office of Mineral Resources for the October 12, 2011 lease sale are pending approval by the board for advertising. It is the staff's recommendation that they be given the authority to advertise the aforementioned nominations at the Office of Mineral Resources for the October 2011 lease sale.
Okay, I need a motion and second to accept the staff recommendation. Motion by Mr. Arnold, second by Mr. Segura. Is there any public comment on this item? Any comment from the committee? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion passes.
And the final item, we recommend to accept a bid on track 42131 from the July 13, 2011 lease sale. At the July 13, 2011 lease sale, we received two bids on track 42131, advertised as 2,401.49 acres. The two and only bids were by Success Energy LLC. One bid was for a portion containing 598.8 acres with a cash payment of $128,742 or a per acre value of $215, with royalties being 22%. The second portion bid by Success Energy LLC contained 45 acres with a cash payment of $23,175 or a per acre value of $515, with royalties also being 22%. The staff recommended and the board awarded the 598.8 acre tract. What the staff failed to realize was that the 598.8 acres had a 45-acre hole within the tract. Thus, the 45 acres did not overlap the other bid. The staff did not recommend to reject or award the 45 acres. As a result, the staff is recommending that the portion bid of 45 acres on tract 42131 from the July 13, 2011 lease sale with a cash payment of $23,175 or a per acre value of $515 and royalties of 22% for a five-year primary term is an acceptable bid having an effective date of August the 10th, 2011.
Okay, I need a motion and second to accept Success Energy LLC's 45-acre bid on tract 42131 from the July 13, 2011 minerals lease sale with a cash payment of $23,175 or a per-acre value of $515 per acre, royalties of 22% and a five-year primary term with an effective date of August 10, 2011. Motion by Mr. Smith, second by Mr. Arnold. Any public comment on this item? Any comment from the committee? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion passes. That's it. Just need a motion and second to adjourn the nomination tract evaluation committee meeting. Motion by Mr. Sanders, second by Mr. Arnold. All in favor? Any opposed? Committee's adjourned.
Let's call roll for the audit committee. Mr. Angel, Mr. Segura,
here.
Mr. Arnold, myself, I'm here. Mr. Cordero, Mr. Ingram, Mr. Morton, Mr. Sanders,
present.
Mr. Smith, we do have a quorum. How you doing, Rachel?
Good morning.
Good morning, Rachel.
Item number one on the audit agenda is a penalty waiver request from Swift Energy Operating LLC for a penalty in the amount of $75,433.01, which was billed for late payment of royalty. On January 25, 2011, Swift paid the state a total of $285,831.31 in late royalty for the dates of June 2008 through February 2010. The payment was not related to a field audit. Swift was late in remitting payment as a result of a severance tax refund received after State Lease 18907 number 5 was approved as a deep well. Swift was billed and paid $33,239.65 in interest. In accordance with protocol, staff is recommending a 75% waiver because royalty was outstanding less than 3 years. The amount of the reduction would be $56,574.75 with a balance of $18,858.26 owed the state. We do have representatives from Swift here today who would like to address the board.
Good morning, gentlemen. Please state your name for the record, please.
Willie Jaden.
Barry Turcott.
Good morning, Chairman Smith, and to the Mineral Board. We'd first like to start off by expressing our extreme gratitude to you all by allowing us to come and to appear before you today regarding this penalty assessment. And secondly, to also offer our humblest apologies for the deferment of late royalty to the Office of Mineral Resources. Thirdly, we, as stated by Director Newman, we would like to request waiver of the penalties assessed on the late payment of royalty to the state, which occurred for a number of reasons. The first was related to a severance tax incentive refund that we received on State Lease 18907 number 5. At the time that production occurred during current month, severance tax was fully paid to the state until we received approval of the wells as a deep well, and subsequent to that filed amendments with the Department of Revenue, ultimately receiving the severance tax refunds from the state. At that time, we began reconciliation of the refund payment and remitted to the Office of Mineral Resources their proportionate share of the severance tax abatement. As a result, penalties and interest did incur, and we remitted the interest to the state upon receipt of the invoice for interest and penalty. The second payment, which was much more significant in the amount of $798,000 in late royalty, was the result of an independent and internal audit that was conducted by Swift Energy solely autonomously from the state. We went through a system conversion in 2006 through 2007, and one of the things we discovered was that we did have some money that had been coded to a suspense account, and upon proper review, we determined that the money really should have been remitted to the Office of Mineral Resources. So at that time, we further investigated and discovered that it was the sole resort of additional royalties due relating to all gravity adjustments as well as NGLs that had not been recorded in a proper manner. However, just slightly prior to that, we had a transition of personnel where we had individuals who was primarily responsible for making remittance to the state to leave the company, and all of that occurred around the same time that we were going through the system implementation. But subsequent to that, as we began to properly review our accounts and reconcile our accounts, we determined that additional royalty was due the state, and we did everything that we possibly could to make sure that we got those dollars to the Office of Mineral Resources as quickly as we possibly could. And we also took the liberty to come and to sit down and visit in person with Director Newman as well as Mr. John Schott of the Office of Mineral Resources to make sure that the transition was as smooth as could possibly be in light of the fact that payment had been deferred. We do everything that we possibly can as a stakeholder in this state to make sure that we're as transparent as we can possibly be with the Office of Mineral Resources. We pride ourselves in maintaining a high level of integrity and trust and working very closely with the agency to make sure that the state's interest is kept whole. Again, we would like to extend our humblest apologies and to show our concern in this regard. Not only did I come to appear before you today, but also we have Mr. Barry Turcott, who is Vice President and Controller, as well as Mr. Richard Kimberlin, who is the Director of WAN, seated directly behind me here, in addition to myself as Manager of Regulatory Accounting. We respectfully request waiver of the penalties.
Mr. Arnold, would you like me to go on to number two? Mr. Gayden did speak to it.
I think I'll be able to go ahead and...
Okay. I didn't know if you wanted to take them...
Take care of item one first and go on to item two. Are there any other questions or... Any other comments or...
No, I appreciate Willie coming here. He's done a great job reconciling those accounts. It's been a long process. We now have the resources we need to help us with that. Just to summarize, we had system issues, people issues. We're on top of that now.
Any comments or questions from the committee? Ms. Ingram?
We've been in the state of Louisiana. Our company is approximately 32 years old. We've probably been in the state probably about 20 to 25 of those years. 20 of those years. I've been with the organization approximately 14 years and can certainly attest to those 14 years. Mr. Kimberlin has been with us a lot longer and he attests to 20. About 20, yes, sir. This is the first incident resulting from royalties due to the state being coded to a suspense account, and we've done everything to ensure that there are no other dollars in any other account related to the state interest.
Any other questions?
Yes, sir.
Can you talk a little bit more about the severance tax incentive and the deep well? Were they late in approving it, or?
Well, it is a process that you initially file an application for a deep well or horizontal well, which basically under the statute, a deep well is a well, just for clarity, if it is drilled to a true vertical depth of 15,000 feet or greater, then a well would be eligible to qualify for a 24-month severance tax abatement or until 50% of the capital cost is recovered. And it is initially approved by the Office of Conservation, and once it is approved, then at that particular point in time, you are allowed to go back and file amendments to recover the severance tax refunds associated with it.
Okay.
Mr. Sanders, any question?
Yes. Would you help me a little bit, please? What is this suspense account that the money was placed in? What does that mean in the accounting world?
Well, basically, in the accounting world, we had an account which normally you would refer to as a suspense account, but money is not truly suspended. It was the way that...
Sorry, if you're saying expense account, not
suspense. No, suspense.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Generally, that particular account was an account designed under a system that was, first of all, obsolete, and the way that it got coded to that account is it would get coded to the account under a different owner number, but we would process manually payments that are due any regulatory body. Whereas today, the system that we have is more contemporary, and it is designed for industry, and it goes to a specific account solely for the Office of Mineral Resources. So the previous account, not only did you have, like, money that would have been due the Office of Mineral Resources, but you could have also money that would be due, like, General Land Office, per se, that would be going to that account.
So this, just so I'll understand it, this $285,000 in change was placed in that suspense account and remained there how long?
Actually, the... $285,000, were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to mention that's the penalty amount. The actual amount we had remitted was
$798,000.
I'm sorry, I missed
$798,000.
Two different items as
well. I got it. Right. The $798,000, first of all, I want to make sure that we understand that was additional royalty that was indeed due the state, but it was not something that was initially recorded during current month. So the royalties that were due for 2005 through 2006 time frame did get paid, but this was additional adjustments that were made subsequent to the payment having been made during current month. So in essence, in accounting, periodically you will have accounting adjustments, and this is what this was. It was accounting adjustments that were made at a later period for back periods. However, at the time that it was made, it was recorded to the wrong account.
As you probably are aware, we generally follow staff's recommendations. You do acknowledge that under the recommendation, we were waiving 75% of the penalty.
On item one.
Pardon me?
On the first item.
On item one, yes.
Yes, sir.
A reduction of 56,000 and change down to 18,000 is the amount of money we're talking about here. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Smith?
Basically, it was a human error coding issue. Is that correct? Is what you're telling us?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any other comments or questions? We have the staff's recommendation to waive 75%. On item one, is there a motion to approve?
Can I just ask, do you have anything else to say, Rachel, concerning the issue?
On item number one.
Other than your recommendation, I mean.
I have nothing additional to add.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
As you can see, we have some questions here as to, and you're to be commended for coming forward and when you discovered your error and promptly paying it.
And we want to be fair. That's why we're asking these questions here. That's my position, is being fair to you all.
Yes, sir. Excuse me, if it would please the board for me just to elaborate and revert back to Chairman Smith's question. Actually, the adjustment, the additional adjustment, the all adjustment gravity, the all gravity adjustment was something that was not just solely left to Swift cognizance alone. That also would relate to whatever negotiations occurred between, like, our energy marketing department and the purchaser. And again, now we're talking about the second part of Director Newman's, which he's addressing. The NGL piece of that was an additional adjustment, you know, that occurred for probably a number of reasons where it did not get recorded initially, and that could have also, that piece could have been related to human error. Yes, sir.
Just one more question.
Yes, I do. You're familiar with our penalty waiver protocol that we have established, and
yes, sir.
We want to always be erring on the side of following that protocol, but the board has some authority and leeway, as you know. So you're following that protocol. You understand why we're here today about the 18,000.
Oh, yes, sir, absolutely.
And this is, the 18,000 is within the parameters of what you owe, and it's just a question, you're asking for some mercy because of the situation of accounting and staff. Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion.
Go ahead, Mr. Sewer.
And we're just dealing with item one?
We're just dealing with item one at a time.
I'd like to make a motion to have a 100% waiver of the penalty.
Second. Sanders.
Is anybody who did?
Second, Mr. Segura's.
Okay.
Any comments from the public on this item? Anyone opposed? Hearing none. Item one carries 100% waiver. Item two, Ms. Rachel.
Item number two is a penalty waiver request from Swift Energy Operating LLC for a penalty in the amount of $254,685.33, billed for the late payment of royalty. On June 6, 2011, Swift paid the state a total of $778,798.03 in late royalty for disposition dates of January 2005 through December 2006. The payment was not related to a field audit. Swift was late in remitting payment because prior period adjustments for natural gas liquids revenue were inadvertently posted in a non-recurring manner to a temporary suspense account. Filing of amendments for the additional royalty was further delayed by staffing changes and a system conversion. Swift discovered the underpayment through an internal audit and promptly contacted the Mineral Income Division and remitted payment. And as Mr. Gayden stated previously, he did come to the office and talk to us in June about this. Swift was billed and paid $296,611.80 in interest. In accordance with penalty waiver protocol, staff is recommending no penalty be waived because royalty was outstanding for more than 6 years. The amount owed the state would remain $254,685.33. It is the policy of the Office of Mineral Resources to treat all items submitted on a single state royalty report as a whole. In determining the outstanding royalty period for late payments, the earliest disposition date on the report is used as the measure. Penalty protocol allows a 75% reduction for royalty outstanding 3 years or less. A 50% reduction is for royalty outstanding 6 years or less. Anything exceeding 6 years, we recommend zero. Swift State Royalty Report was submitted on June 6, 2011. Total royalty outstanding in excess of 6 years for this report was $40,149.22. This includes royalty due between the months of February 2005 and May 2005.
Thank you. So your recommendation is zero based upon protocol.
Based on penalty protocol, yes, sir.
Right. Notwithstanding, pretty much turned himself in and...
They did come to us. They did remit payment promptly, and it was discovered through an internal audit on Swift's behalf.
Okay.
Question?
Yes, sir, Mr. Sanders.
Ms. Rachel, do I understand that the amount that was outstanding for more than 6 years, all of it was outstanding six, but the excess over the six was $40,000?
That's correct. $40,000 of the $778,000. But because it's all submitted on one report.
Thank you, and I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. Do we have any consideration we give? Because there's a lot of difference in $40,000 in your world and my world and $770,000, almost $79,000. They paid all of it. So you assess the penalty on the entire outstanding amount?
When it's submitted on one royalty report, yes, sir. That's our policy.
You understand I respect the policy that we have here, but and I respect your good services. I just wanted to focus on that point.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Yes, I would like to ask if that is a policy or if that is a practice.
It's a policy.
Okay, that makes it clear.
Just to be clear, Jackson Logan with the Attorney General's office, just to be clear, the policy is what the policy is, and Rachel has to abide by the policy. The mineral board has the discretion because that's also stated in the policy is that the mineral board has the discretion to consider other factors. But Rachel was following the protocol. So just to be clear,
thank you. Ms. Ingram?
I just think that this, while the policy is what it is, I think these gentlemen brought it to our attention. They tried to do the right thing. They've been in this state for 25 years, have done a tremendous amount of business with the state, and this isn't anything that they were hiding or trying to get away with, and these are the type of people I think we want to continue to do business with. I think we ought to show them some consideration.
Mr. Durr?
Was the issue of non-payment the same as before with this new account and all that?
No, this is, when I addressed this earlier, it was premature because we were still talking about item one, and I began just to digress on the total reason why we're here, but this is specifically item number two that I was speaking in reference to. Item number one, which you all have already motioned and moved on, was related to and contingent upon approval by the Office of Conservation, as well as monies being refunded to SWIFT by the Department of Revenue, which would have resulted in a deferral of payment to the Office of Mineral Resources. Yes, sir.
How about this one, the second one?
But the second one is the one where we had this amount that was coded to this account, and again, in a recurring manner, and I said in a recurring manner because of the fact that normally and historically we do not code money that is due the state to a suspense account. It goes to a payable account where it is accrued and paid monthly and continually reconciled. And I might also add, in addition to that, as a part of that reconciliation process, we speak with Mr. Schott and as well as Ms. Newman on a need-to-be basis, but we speak with Mr. Schott on a very, very regular basis to make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep the state's interests whole.
Right. Okay. Thanks,
yes, sir. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah,
Mr. Angel?
Yeah. The background information indicates, and I just want to apologize, I was discussing some rather important issues with General Counsel. To follow up on Mr. Ingram's comments, that this was discovered internally by SWIFT?
Yes, sir.
What prevented, during that, this is a question, I guess, from Ms. Talley. During this time period, this six-year time period, was SWIFT Energy audited?
I'm sorry, I don't have the answer to that question right now. Actually, I made myself a note to check that when we go back upstairs. This is actually outside of an audit period. They have not been audited for this time period.
Okay, help me understand what that means. They have not been audited for this time period. What does that mean?
For the time period that the royalty paid covered. So that would be the January 2005 through December 2006.
Okay, so for that two-year period of time, SWIFT Energy was not audited?
No, sir. That period has not been covered under audit.
Okay. Would it be fair to say that they, at a later point in time, had this not presented itself, that we would have had the ability in, say, 2010, 2011, let's even go 2012 and 13, to go back and in audit for this particular time period and discover this situation?
I can't speak with 100% certainty that it would be discovered in an audit, but yes, it's very possible it would be discovered under audit.
Speak to the probability of whether or not we would, in fact, now in August of 2011, speak to the probability of whether or not under the protocols of what it is that we have to audit and of what we have available auditors to audit, speak of the probability of the fact that we would actually, in fact, go back to a 2005-2006 period on here.
This period will be audited in the future. SWIFT still has an open audit that we're trying to work to close out, which they have been cooperating to close out with us. Once that one is closed out, we will audit this period. I'm not 100% certain what properties are involved in this $778,000. But when we do go into audit, we look at properties, we look at materiality, and if those properties fell under materiality, they would certainly be included in the audit. If there were anything else that led us to look at these, they would be looked at as well. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're in the right zip code now. I'm trying to get to the right spot. So this particular amount in this particular situation is, in your mind, perhaps only a portion of, you certainly can't say that there are no other issues during this time period until you couldn't say that for anybody, whether it was the ABC company or SWIFT, until you actually conduct the audit, right?
Correct.
Okay. Would it be possible then, in as much as there has been no audit of that particular time period, that we may owe SWIFT some money for some things that we would discover in an audit?
Mm-hmm. And that would be used to offset any findings. I can tell you, because this issue did pop up, more than likely this will be hit in an audit just to verify that they did come forward and pay the correct amount and that there is no additional money due outstanding, because $778,000 from January 2005 to December 2006 is a pretty decent chunk of change.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is, it would appear to me that in my own world, if the auditor showed up, I would want a complete audit on everything from A to Z, as opposed to a piecemeal, I owe you some today, you owe me some tomorrow, and on and so forth. And this did not come about as a result of our work.
No.
This came as a result of their discovery.
Yes, sir.
It could very well be, and I think you hit probability at 100% when you said this time period will be audited.
Yes.
So I'm leading to a series of questions that once we do a complete audit of this time period, as so we should, and we will, that there will be an amount that usually they will owe us or we will owe them.
Yes, sir.
Does it make sense at all then, and I don't know the answer to this question, so I ask you, does it make sense at all for us to actually do the audit and know that this is part of a finding, and let's go do the entire audit, because what we may find in that entire audit may impact our decision on whether or not we want to waive a protocol on only a small part of the totality of what would be audited. I'm looking for management advice to help me understand why would we consider a waiver at all until we know the full picture. What if the full picture represented something that would impact, in my mind, for me as one board member, how I would want to vote on this protocol? Would not be better to know that full picture rather than just a particular snapshot? And this represents to me a snapshot of something, and I'm trying to get a broader view, because there may be something that we would discover that I would say, I am absolutely, based on that audit of that time period, not going to support a waiver. But it may be also something in that audit that you produce to me that says, absolutely, I want to support this. And so I'm looking at it from the entire operations of the company during that time period, as opposed to just one thing. Don't know if that makes sense. I would be interested in getting board members to jump in on that discussion.
Mr. Ingram, you had a question?
I do. While I'm sure that the state not only would like to have the money from the penalties and the late fees, and I'm sure they need it, but since I've been on this committee, I've made it clear that this is the worst way in the world for this board to make money. And these people aren't in the snowball business. What they do is very, very complicated, and I'm sure it's easy to make mistakes. And I think we ought to take that into consideration.
Thank you. Mr. Sanders?
Ms. Rachel, what's troubling me here, and also y'all and the board, is I know that technically we're right on the money in assessing the amount of penalty, and we're on the money in assessing all of it. But it sort of strikes me, and I don't want to set any policy here today, I'm going to deal with this issue for this company on this date with no regard to future issues. It strikes me that maybe we ought to assess them a penalty of 100% on, or some number, on the $40,000, because they technically were not out of the money, except that $40,000 triggered it to a penalty of $296,000. My eyes are kind of weak this morning. Stock market's got me blind. $296,000. You have any comment about what I'm wrestling with intellectually? Yes, sir.
Can I go ahead and answer that?
Yes, sir. I'd like that.
I would just say the policy, as I stated before, the policy is what the policy is. The staff does not have the discretion to make those considerations in the way that the policy is worded. Thus, the mineral board has the discretion to make those type of considerations and to factor those things in. To answer your question, Mr. Angel, if I may take a shot, is I look at the audit and what happened with Swift as two different things, because what Swift was doing was making us total, was making us whole. They owed us that royalty. We will then go back and take a look at what happened. And yes, there may be a balancing that occurs during that period, but what they were doing was making us whole on royalties that were due for that time period.
I'm not sure I understand. Once you...
Well, I just...
So you're saying that the $40,000 makes us whole?
No, what I am saying is I feel like they only filled their gas tank up 80%. They didn't pay the 100% that they owed us.
Okay, what is it in your mind that they owe us as a result of this? I'm looking at $40,149.22 of royalty for the last 6 years.
Well, that's the royalty that was not paid during the time period that exceeded 6 years. The total was 700 and whatever the value.
778,000.
So my point is,
but they paid that.
Correct, but that was due.
I understand. What was due, what they paid is not subject, is what they've already paid to me is not germane to this conversation.
Well, I think it's germane to the extent that you asked how can you make a judgment without having the knowledge of a full audit. What I'm saying is they are now paying you up to 100% of what you were due to date. We'll catch other issues through an audit at a later period of time. That may or may not be beneficial.
Okay, so they're paying the amount that, and we may be there, the amount that, notwithstanding the penalty provision, the amount that is necessary to get us to what they owe us for royalty,
mm-hmm.
is it the 778?
Yes.
798 plus
interest.
The 40,149.22?
No, the 40,149, whatever it is, is part of the 748.
Yes.
Again.
Okay, so maybe I'm missing something. We'll try one more time. I'm reading a document that says on June the 6th, Swift Energy paid the state a total of 778,798.03 in late royalty for disposition dates of January 25th through December 26th, 2006. And I see another note that says they owe us $40,000 in royalty outstanding for more than 6 years on this report. So I'm trying to drafted this document.
I did.
Okay, I'm
the only portion that was in excess of 40,000 of the 6 years is the 40,000. And that would be disposition dates from January of 2005 through April 2005. That's that February 2005 and May 2005 is when we would have been paid the money. So basically, the 40,000 is included in the 778,000. The remaining, which would be about 740,000, that fell within the 6 year period. I only point out the 40,000 fell outside of the 6 year period because 6 years is our cutoff for zero. And I want to show the proportionate amounts. I want to show you what was outstanding more than 6 years as opposed to what was outstanding less than 6 years.
So item number two is strictly about penalty waiver and has nothing to do about royalty collection. It's strictly about penalty waiver, obviously a nexus to royalty, but that 254 that you mentioned in here on item number two has nothing to do with royalty.
It's only the penalty assessed on late royalty payment. The royalty is paid. We have that in hand.
Okay.
It's just the result.
So we're only talking about the penalty.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So getting back to my original question, if during the audit period, so we have been paid everything that we are owed with regards to royalty.
We've been made whole by the payment of 740, whatever.
And I'm sorry?
Interest. We've been paid interest.
Okay, so we've been made whole. The question is whether or not the imposition of a penalty is appropriate public policy at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I can answer that question. There is no reason the board has to rule one way or the other on the penalty today. We can carry it on the books if it's the board's prerogative and come back after the audit's over with. It does not have to be decided today.
Sure, I appreciate that. So my point that I'm trying to at least bring to for discussion, and again I'll try one more time, is the $254,000 is a penalty
mm-hmm.
for late payment of an issue that they discovered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And perhaps when we go back and we do this audit, we will find some things that would help us to decide whether or not we want to impose this. Part of my reason for wanting to impose a penalty and not imposing a penalty is to see how somebody behaves during a time period in totality, not in a one particular situation. That, I can tell you from my standpoint. You know, if I've got a company that has invested in this state and done a good job and created jobs and paid local taxes and payroll and on and on and on and on and on, I want to see that whole picture. Personally, that's at least from my decision standpoint. If board members say, no, I want to look at it at a rifle and I'm looking at it from a shotgun approach, I understand that and we can agree to disagree. But it would be, I think, the best public policy is, in this situation, is this audit, you again indicated, will happen during that time period.
Yes, sir.
That 254 is out there. It's available for us to come back, if we so choose,
yes,
as a recommendation. But once we look at the full picture, we may decide instead of the 254, it may need to be 500,000.
Now, if I may add something, whenever we do the audit, if there is any exceptions that we issue, there is interest and penalty for those exceptions as well. So if we find anything in the audit is treated separately, of course, because this is dealing with royalty, but the audit is treated separately, and we take that amount and we assess interest and penalties on that amount from the audit,
right,
separate from
this.
Gotcha.
Okay.
What's the time frame on the audit? How long will it take to do the type audit he's talking about for the full?
Well, Swift is a very large payer.
Yeah.
It would take us quite a while. The other audit, I don't have the information right in front of me as far as how long that's been ongoing, but Swift is very large. We're talking about a pretty big audit.
Yeah.
It's something that's done. The audit itself may happen within several months, but anything that's after the audit, and Mr. Gayden knows that as well, there's so many things that can go back and forth. There may be additional information that we see after we give them any exceptions. So the negotiation, it's ongoing,
right,
for years.
I would like to move at the appropriate time that we defer the imposition of the penalty, that we do not take action on whether or not we impose it or not. We just defer the imposition and make this part of the direct the staff and make this part of the final audit report for the time period that is subject to the audit here, at which point in time the board would then have to make a decision on the totality of the audit, whether or not the imposition of this 254, 685, 33 is appropriate public policy.
We have a motion. Your seconds?
Second
by Mr. Sanders. Any comments or questions? Mr. Smith, did you have a question?
I was going to recommend that we table it until the entire audit is completed.
Mr. Smith, did you have any other comments or questions?
That is, I concur with that. I will.
Okay. Any comments or questions from the public? We have a motion and a second. Anyone opposed? Hearing none, the item is tabled until the audit. Thank you.
And I do want to compliment the staff. I realize that, you know, doing the work necessary and then coming before a group and having to lay that out is tough. And so my comments and my question is not designed to do anything other than to bring about, you know, the good decisions that we're charged with. Keep on leading and keep on providing that information. That's what you should.
Thank you.
Ms. Newman, item three.
Item number three is the staff report to the committee that the election for August 2011 gas is to be paid on a processed basis at the Discovery plant at LaRose and the C. Robin plant at Henry for the terms of the State Texaco Global Settlement Agreement.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I believe, so item one is 100% waived. Item two is pending a full audit, which would be some time down the future. There'd be no interest on that as well, right? Any outstanding penalties?
No, the penalty is set. It's done.
Okay.
It stands at that amount for now.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Motion to adjourn. Moved by Mr. Smith. Second by Mr. Segura. You're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
They've already paid it, but they took the money back.
they're going to go first.
I'm fine, darling. How are you today? You going to get some water?
You should be so blessed.
He should have asked me. But you. I'm ready when you are. Board ready to proceed. Call to order the Legal and Title Controversy Committee. Ms. Heck, Ms. April, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir.
Do a roll call, please. Ms. Dongell? Yes. Ms. Segura?
Yes.
Mr. Arnold? Ms. Cadera?
Here.
Mr. Diaz? Good morning, Mr. Diaz. Mr. Ingram?
Yes.
Mr. Martin? Sanders present. Smith and Smith. Graves? We have more than enough quorum. You can go. You ready to proceed, sir?
Yes, sir. Before we start on the agenda that you have, I would like to recommend the board add another item to the agenda. It's a request by Walter Oil and Gas for an operating agreement on lands formerly covered by State Lease 20349 and 2350, the particulars of which I will explain when that item comes up. I'd like to add it as item number 8.
Waterford, did you say?
Walter.
Oh.
Walter Oil and Gas.
Thank you.
Okay. I would like to add it as item number 8, which is right the last item that's going to be taken in open session. Everything else will be in executive session.
Thank you, sir.
So let me get this. So we have...
Thank you, dear.
We have...
I love you, darling.
Okay, so items 8 would become 9.
This would become item number 8.
Right.
Item number 8, which is presently not item number 8, would be an executive session. That would be 9 and then 10 and 11.
Okay. I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay, you ready to proceed, sir?
You need to take a vote.
That has to be unanimous, and we have to allow public comment.
All right. Any public comment on the motion? What's the board's pleasure? Have a vote. Any objection? Unanimous. Proceed.
At this time, I would like to recommend to the board that we go to item number 11. Well, now item number 11, I think it is.
Yeah.
Is the presentation by the Office of Conservation, which is a PowerPoint presentation. Since we have people from conservation here.
Didn't see anything about that. Where is that? I don't know. Let's see. Who is this doing this presentation?
First, let me, by way of introduction, this is Chris Sandoz, who's with our engineering division, the Office of Conservation, primarily in charge of enforcement and inspections. With me as well is Gary Snellgrove. He's the division director of the environmental division within the Office of Conservation, who, among other things, permits waste disposal facilities associated with exploration production waste and handles the groundwater management programs for the office. My name is Blake Camplin. I'm the attorney for the Office of Conservation, and I'd like to thank you for allowing us the opportunity to make a presentation today, primarily focusing on reuse of frack water supply and its place within the total world of water used for hydraulic fracturing within the state. And as y'all probably all are aware, with the Haynesville Shale being as prominent as it is, large volumes of water are needed for the fracturing and the production of these shales, including the Tuscaloosa Marine Shale, which has, as of late, become a big part of the news. Though fracturing has existed for a while, the Haynesville Shale is the first time that multi-stage fracking within the state occurred, and therefore is, to a large degree, I think, everything that I say today probably needs to be taken in light of that of the Haynesville Shale play. Many things were known going in, many things were prepared for, but also many things have been learned and many changes have been made. The Office of Conservation, as I mentioned before, does have a groundwater management plan, program, and the program's primary purpose is to maintain sustainability of groundwater aquifers in the state. Again, looking at the Haynesville as kind of the main, I would say, factor in a lot of the policies over the last year or two for groundwater on hydraulic fracturing. Our primary concern was the area that was underlaid the part of the state where the Haynesville is located contains the Carrizo-Wilcox aquifer, which is primarily a low-yield aquifer by comparison to the larger aquifer systems in the state, such as the Sparta, the Chico. And therefore, there were, you know, concerns that the groundwater aquifer itself would not be capable of supplying the amount of water needed for the hydraulic fracturing within the Haynesville on its own. Therefore, the Office of Conservation early on began the process of trying to promote alternate sources of water, whether this be surface water or, as we're about to discuss, water reuse. The Office of Conservation has done its best to try to avoid overuse of the Carrizo-Wilcox aquifer and therefore maintain its duty to basically promote sustainability of that aquifer. In late 2009, and it has been subsequently amended, the Office of Conservation passed regulations which allowed the reuse of hydraulic fracture flowback waste. This is the flowback that occurs almost immediately within, probably 2 to 3 weeks after, 1 to 3 weeks, I guess I should say, after the hydraulic fracture operation. It was intended and it is done to diminish the amount of water that is going to be taken from the groundwater and from surface water resources. In order to control the waste portion of this, to make sure that this promotion of recycling was not used as a cover for illegal disposal, the Office of Conservation did have to put certain limitations on this type of reuse, and the primary one being that the recycled water had to be used by the same operator in a well that they operated elsewhere in the state. In other words, there could not be a transfer of this reuse water, this waste, to another operator because it simply could not be tracked with any degree of efficiency and therefore risk. To some degree, in masking a legal disposal. In addition, we limited the type of waste that could be used, those that were known not to be, negatively impacting the hydraulic fracture operations, those that were known not to contain, particularly toxic materials. And in addition, we also require that the landowner consent be affirmed or through an affidavit by the operator. Because again, this was taking the waste and reusing it, perhaps on a different landowner's lease. The amendment that you see in June of 2010 was essentially a change from a one-time reuse to allowing for multiple reuse, again by the same operator. But it still did not allow for a commercial type operation where you would have the trading of the water, the recycled water amongst multiple operators. That had been discussed, and so while it was allowed under our off-site commercial disposal facility regulations, we felt that it was absolutely necessary to promulgate rules in November of 2010 to provide both clarity and really efficiency to the process to make certain that there was no miscommunication or misunderstandings by the operators as to what would be required to receive one of these. A commercial facility essentially is a disposal, treatment, or storage facility which, for profit, will accept waste from multiple operators, and in this case would then recycle that water, would reclaim the waste, and be able to sell it to other operators for use in the hydraulic fracture process. Again, there were limitations on to the type of waste that could be used. Consistent with the commercial facility regulations in general, the waste would be tracked from the original well that it was the flowback was coming from to the disposal facility, the reclamation facility. It would then be, after it is reclaimed, would also be tracked to the future well that is going to be used on. In that way, we're able to, again, make certain that the recycling program, this reclamation program, is not a some type of mask for legal disposal operations and therefore be able to enforce our environmental regulations statewide. Again, the operators who we look to for responsibility purposes, whenever the reclaimed waste after the waste has been reclaimed, it's being used at the new well site, and it essentially, is relatively new in our view. Though it's a year old, it is starting to come into being. As of today, we only have one application that we are currently reviewing. However, we have received notice through two notices of intent to apply for these facilities that have been published recently, and we've also received I believe it's three additional notifications, informally as they may be, of an interest to try to proceed with one of these applications. As I was discussing, as the Office of Conservation was looking at the Haynesville Shale, one of the primary points that was constantly discussed was, again, trying to determine how water was being used. From our perspective, this was primarily a focus on the groundwater because that was the program that we had. However, we wanted as much information as we could get and as much specificity as to where, how much water was being used and where it was going towards in the both the drilling and the completion process. This chart essentially separates out both groundwater, surface water, into three categories. The two biggest categories being the rig supply water. That's essentially the water that's needed to drill the well. And then the frack supply, and that, of course, is the water that's used in the fracking process. And as you can see by the chart, the amount of water needed to frack a well far exceeds that to drill it. And also, as you see there, surface water is the predominant type of water that is being used in the hydraulic fracturing process, while groundwater is primarily used in the drilling process. The specific numbers are off to your left, and it's broken down in even further below that where it says water stats. You'll see that essentially the average well, this again is in the Haynesville, takes approximately 5.5 million gallons of water to both drill and to complete it. The fracking process itself, though, is approximately 5 million gallons per well. Chris, could you go on to the next one? But this is where we get to the specifics of the reuse. We break down the surface. Again, the surface water being any water that's not the is not groundwater. And as you can see there, the form that we have, which is the work history report, which is done after the well has been completed, is filled in by the operators, and they are attesting to the validity of this. And according to the reports that we've received to date, as you can see, the majority of the water is coming from private sources. This would primarily be private ponds or lakes that are on one individual's property, therefore not subject to a state charge. The public sources, obviously, the public waterways. And finally, the frack water reuse, as you see there, is only 1% of the total. Obviously, as we can see here, the use has not really taken over this reuse process, but we believe as the commercial side of this gets going, we'll see an increase. Again, we have not yet approved a single commercial facility because we have yet only had one application filed. But we believe that once that becomes available, it will be an additional option that will promote the reuse of this flowback waste for purposes of limiting the amount of water resources that has to be used for the state. Among other things, I think, this is, it seems that the logistics and the timing that are associated with the reuse of the water by an operator may mean that the commercial facility will be where we see the greatest success for water reuse today. With that, that concludes our presentation on the groundwater reuse. But I wanted to obviously open it up to questions because I know you'll probably have many and try best to answer them.
I have.
Yes, sir.
Chairman has a question. If we move forward with this and it's successful in recycling and removing the waste from the water What would we would use the water again to refract again, hopefully, if it's commercially feasible to transport it to the site?
Correct.
Would this program, if successful, put us ahead of all of the complaints that I'm reading about in the Journal and other places in Pennsylvania with the discharge of this waste into their water streams, et cetera? Would this put us ahead of the curve?
I believe we're already ahead in that regard. The Office of Conservation has a long history of a very robust waste disposal. What this primarily would put us ahead on is the recycling of that wastewater. What it would primarily put us ahead on is the use of water resources within the state, which, at least to my knowledge, doesn't exist in other states. I can't say absolutely, but to my knowledge.
We have a running discussion in the board here about operators using our water supplies from the streams. And the state's not being compensated, and you know it's a constitutional law question about whether the state's making a donation and so on and so forth. What would this do for that approach?
The extent that this would help. This could only help. But the extent that it's going to help, we will know as this moves forward. Because, as I said, we only have one application for a permit from the commercial side that is within the office and is currently under review. But we see it's lining up with, two definite notices of permit, and behind that, three additional. We hope that this grows, and we hope that with that, we will see a bigger, slice of the pie coming from this reuse, this recycled water.
Yeah, just to address that, certainly we way ahead of Pennsylvania as is.
Yes, sir.
Because in Pennsylvania, they have the right to discharge those waters.
In the stream.
Into streams. We don't allow that here. Way ahead. And then additionally, what this is about management of the water resource,
right.
Taking less pressure off of the water resources by allowing those water resources which have either been withdrawn from groundwater or surface water to be recycled, which means that to do the next well, you need to withdraw a lesser amount of water. And then furthermore, you have less of which to dispose in an injection well. And over time, the Haynesville is going to be challenged with having, if you would, enough landfill space by comparison, by having enough
injection
space. And the vast majority, and Gary may be able to, Mr. Snellgrove may be able to give me this, but I know that was one of the threats that we were looking at when we went up and made our presentation to the legislators in Northwest Louisiana. The vast majority of the wastewater or the frack water, the flowback, is being transported to Texas.
Right.
And our ability to have, again, by comparison, enough landfill space here in the state and or in Texas, and is, I guess to the degree that it's available there, then it makes sense for us for operators to bring it there in a cost-effective manner. So we can help ourselves by being smart and having a process that does not require, number one, the withdrawal of as much water resources. And if you're in the northwest area of Louisiana, as Ms. Smith is, you fundamentally aware of more water issues than probably most people in the state. And secondly, we take pressure off of our limited landfill space.
Are there some economic studies to tell us whether it's feasible from a cost standpoint? Because the driller is going to go to the least expensive source to dispose of the water.
Right. I would say that the success is going to be, or the feasibility is going to be demonstrated by the applications that are, coming in. The companies are making that determination on their own. It's difficult, I think, from a state perspective for us to be able to know all and see all and to determine what is, going to work best. I would only second what the Secretary said as far as the disposal currently is primarily in Texas. And, brought up to my mind one of the things that, and this is probably a layman's view on it, but one of the things that, to my understanding, is that in that part of the state, the formations that can receive waste are not as numerous and not as large as they are elsewhere in the state, and therefore you know, from our underground injection control program's perspective, to safely dispose of the waste up there is not as, you know, I guess, I don't want to say easy, but it's not feasible on a larger scale as it is elsewhere, and therefore you do see a lot of this transportation. These facilities would be in-state and, you know, likely would be closer for the vast majority of the operations than going across the border into Texas. So I can only imagine that the transportation costs would decrease.
And I can see as a matter of public policy in, you know, a decade or so, maybe maybe sooner than that, that whether or not it's feasible or not, the public policy of the state could be that if you are going to avail yourselves to the benefit of a two-year severance tax exemption, there's a couple of things you may have to do, and that may be you may have to have a higher volume of your water recycled as a environmentally friendly, appropriate thing. And, of course, having a system here that is available to permit that activity would make that kind of public policy readily available.
Is there science? Is the science up with us in terms of reclaiming whatever the waste is in the water and making it commercially available for some other use?
The reuse determination as to what kind of quality would be required for purposes of fracking would have to be made by the operator. Again, looking ahead, each of the applications will have to expressly state how they're going to go about the reclamation process. And so we really have to take it on a case by case. I think once we get additional applications in and we're able to review them, we'll have some better idea as to what's going to be proposed. In every case, you know, it's going to be tracked. And from our perspective, it's going to be enforceable, but we think it's going to rely heavily on the operators to make the determination from a fracturing standpoint what they can and cannot use.
Just as a lawyer, I noticed that, you know, there's always going to be potential liability issues here for disposal of this water and lawsuits potentially out mm-hmm. there in the future, et cetera. The liability always stays with the well operator under your program presently?
All I can speak to is the responsibility, the liability to the Office of Conservation is going to stick with the operator of the well. When they are taking this reclaimed water, they then are taking the responsibility or the liability from our perspective. As I have to tell the operators all the time, I can't speak to what a landowner or what a private citizen may or may not sue upon. So I can't tell them that, you know, we're going to get them any type of indemnification from a private suit. What I'm explaining is that from our perspective, from the regulatory responsibility perspective, we're looking to the operator of that well.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any other board member? Mr. Angel, do you have anything further? Ms. Tyler? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
And enlightening. Thank you.
Ready?
Yes, we're going to tag team here. Let's do it until she gets to one where.
You're going to do that this week. You're going to help us, Ms. Rachel. I mean, Ms. April. Which one are you going to handle?
I'll start off. Item number one is a request for final approval of a settlement agreement and a joint motion to dismiss. This is a concursus case that was filed in St. Mary Parish and was pending for quite some time, and we were finally able to reach a settlement agreement with DC Partnership. The board has already approved the settlement agreement in principle, subject to the drafting, advertising, and placing on the docket of the agreement. It is on the docket as item 1124, and staff does recommend approving.
We have a motion to approve by Mr. Arnold. Here, a second. Thank you, Mr. Segura. We have a second. And we have any public comment on this motion? Any board comment on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you. Items number 2 and 3, I'm going to read in conjunction with each other. Although they both deal with separate leases, the issue is the same. This was a request for a lease amendment from Energy 21. Again, this has already been approved by the board in principle. They have requested to extend the primary term by a period of 6 months. This is the second extension of their primary term. And the original agreement was that we would extend by 6 months, but we would not increase the royalty. So the settlement agreement does have that language in it, and we are therefore not going to amend paragraph 6. Paragraph 6 would be an increase of royalty. So we did want to remove that because the final settlement agreement doesn't include an increase in royalty. Item number 2 pertains to lease number 18737. And item number 3 pertains to lease number 18738. The agreements have been advertised, drafted, advertised, and docketed as numbers 1125 and 1126. And staff does recommend approval of this item.
Point of information before we proceed.
Sure.
You mentioned at the agenda meeting we're getting a full rental payment.
That's correct.
For what we're doing here?
That's correct. For a six-month extension, we get a full rental payment.
Thank you. Any other comment before we move on?
So I have one comment question. So that means for a year, we've got 2 years payment, right?
Two years.
It would be 2 6-month extensions.
No, actually, the first extension they got was for a year in which they paid a full bonus.
Okay.
And a 0.5% royalty increase. But that was a different company. That was Exxon. They got the original extension. They sold the property to Energy
21,
which is drilling, which has the permits and everything to drill the well. They just need more time because by the time they got the full information from Exxon, it was towards the end of that extension that we had already given them. So they need a 6-month extension. They are going to drill well.
And we already had a 0.5% royalty added.
That's correct.
Okay. I move to approve items 2 and 3.
We have a motion. Don't we have a motion on the floor for approving items? Okay. We have Mr. Arnold moves to approve items 2 and 3 collectively. Second, Ms. Smith. Any comment from the board or discussion or question? Public comment concerning the issue? Any objection to the motion to approve items 2 and 3? No, items 3 and 4.
2 and 3.
2 and 3. Items 2 and 3. Motion carries unanimously.
Item number 4 is a request by Petrohawk Energy Corporation to escrow royalty payments. This is a little bit different than the normal escrow request, so I'll give you a little bit detail on it. There was a suit filed in DeSoto Parish by us. It's State of Louisiana versus ASA Properties, All Britain et al. It is not a concursus case. Therefore, there's no statutory authority for anyone to escrow royalty payments. However, there is a title dispute. Petrohawk is the payer, and so they have therefore come to us and requested permission to escrow the royalty payments until the title dispute can be dissolved. We do recommend it. The stipulations that we would like to add to their request are, number one, that the funds be escrowed into an interest-bearing account in a Louisiana financial institution, and that Petrohawk continues to submit SR9 royalty reporting forms to Mineral Income, as well as copies of any deposits that they make into an escrow account so that we can keep up with all of the reconciliations. Normally, we would also add a 90-day provision on this, that they could only escrow the funds for 90 days. We are, however, recommending a waiver of that 90-day provision for this particular case because of the details. This case is a little bit different since it's not a concursus, and we did file a petition.
Before we have a motion, on this escrow account, we're going to place that money in financial institutions that have security on file with state that backs up this money?
We did discuss that internally, and I think we had decided not to make that a provision, but we can certainly discuss it.
I would get guidance from the Office of the Treasurer on that. I certainly think that we need to make sure that we are holding those revenues, which may end up being ours, consistent with the Department of Treasury here in Kennedy, Treasurer Kennedy's office?
Normally, when we escrow funds, they go into the registry of the court because normally it's associated with a concursus petition. This is, like I said, a little bit different, so we can certainly entertain some suggestions on where to put them.
We'll go ahead and seek guidance from the Treasurer's office.
We can defer that until we consult with the Treasurer's office and bring it back next month.
But we can go ahead and I think the board can go ahead and approve escrowing the funds, and we will certainly make a condition that if possible we'll do that. If the Treasurer recommends it, we'll go ahead and put it in a financial institution that has securities on deposit.
I would make that motion that based upon the stipulations that stated.
Ms. Smith, motion, second.
I just got a question. Yeah, just a question before vote.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
We filed suit as a plaintiff, obviously, in this matter.
Correct. This is that wildlife management area that was subject of the operating agreement request by Chesapeake. This is regarding those three tracts. We did file for a declaratory judgment based upon a previous justice decision in that same area.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we are the plaintiffs in the case, asking the court to say, yes, this is our mineral rights.
Right. And so in Petrol Hawk's situation, they either have a lease that is valid from a landowner?
They don't in this case. They operate the unit. The tract of land that is at issue is leased by Chesapeake at the present time from the All Britons.
Okay. So, depending on what the court says, the subject lands that Petrol Hawk
has to pay on,
is paying on, could very well be property that belongs to us.
Correct.
And Petrol Hawk could have a lateral that is on our lands.
Have a what now?
A lateral, a
top lease?
No, a well bore.
Oh.
A horizontal well bore.
That's correct.
That runs through our property?
That's correct. Could.
Subject to a trespass?
That is entirely possible, too.
So, what is the value? I'm trying to understand what's the value of Petrol Hawk depositing that money in escrow. I don't understand that.
Other than paying it would be a royalty payment that if they paid to the All Britain Chesapeake and the state won, then they would owe us the money they had already paid.
Well, you just told me they don't have a lease.
Currently, the state would be considered, presuming we prevail in the All Britain suit, we would be an unleased mineral owner, and we would be entitled to royalties as laid out in the statute for unleased acreage.
No. They are the operators of the unit. As the operator of the unit, they will pay whomever is in the unit from unit production. The tract of land at issue is, if the state wins, then the state is the mineral owner of that tract. We haven't been paid. Ergo, they would owe us the money back from data first production on that tract.
Under what contract? No, I mean, they would owe us money under what terms? That it would be unleashed?
As the owner of the tract.
Of the mineral rights.
So we would then be entitled to 100%?
As an unleashed owner, we are entitled to 8/8 after deduction for the well cost.
So what about the All Britons? They getting paid?
The escrow of the funds, I think, probably would be, they wouldn't get paid either.
I understand escrow and concursus.
Right.
I'm struggling with the appropriate. I mean, there's a conflict between the All Britons and the state of Louisiana, and
correct.
One of them is going to win.
Correct.
Why should we be holding the money?
We're not going to be holding the money. That's why it would be.
It's an account.
The escrow account, so that technically nobody holds the money.
Well, why don't Petrol go deposit it in a fund and escrow it? Why?
That's what the escrow is. It's a trust account, so that someone else, a trustee, would be managing the money, and we wouldn't have control of it, over it. The Albritons won't have control over it, nor will Petrohawk.
Why do we need to agree to that?
Because if we don't, then Petrohawk could perhaps be paying the wrong party, and whoever wins would then also be entitled to that money. If they paid us and the Albritons win, they have to go back and pay the Albritons.
I don't understand why we have to agree to allow Petrohawk to put money in escrow on a tract of land that's in dispute. I don't understand that business transaction.
So they don't owe us penalty. If we allow them to put the money in escrow at interest, in other words,
we don't have to allow them to put money in escrow. That's a decision that they make as an entity doing business. If they want to open up an escrow account and deposit money at interest, and then there's a decision that money is available in that escrow account that they control, okay?
Without the board's decision, if we consider the property ours, and production occurs, we consider that royalty is owed to us from date of first production. If it is not paid timely, then they would owe us at legal interest and penalty for whatever amount of time they didn't pay us. If they asked the board for permission to put money into an account at interest, and it is adjudicated that the state owns the property, then the state has agreed to accept that money at that interest with no penalty. So they get out of paying us legal interest and penalty if the board agrees to allow them to put it into an account.
And the amount of money that they will be putting in an account would be, give me not the dollar amount, but the formula for that.
Based on production.
Probably 8/8.
8/8? Be 100%?
Yes.
It also allows...
That's an absolutely fundamental answer I need to know. I mean, is
that's just, what we would certainly request, that they, that's what they would, we would request, because like you say, there is no operating agreement, there is no lease.
So
now, if something is worked out later on with somebody on that property and it's less than 8/8, in other words, if we make an operating agreement, well, the money is there.
Sure, I get that.
They haven't paid anybody incorrectly. They pay us what we agree upon. They pay whomever we got a lease or an operating agreement, they would pay them, but all the money would be there.
So if the provision is that 100% of the production from those properties,
the value of production from that property
is deposited, then I'm inclined to believe that that's good. But I was very concerned about whether or not it was going to be a 25% royalty provision that they may have a lease from on with Chesapeake that they may have acquired from the Albritons that would then put us in a situation where we would, you know, we would get to a point where, well, let's just go ahead and accept it. I don't want to put pressure on us to accept a poor deal if 100% of the money is going in there.
No. Without a contract, there is no percentage that we would be requesting that they put the entire amount of the funds attributable to that track. Because in essence, whoever wins, they're going to pay out that 100% to a lessee, a lessor, an operator, a grantee, those kinds of things. So all of that would be paid out, but they'd have to have that money set aside to do that and not pay incorrectly.
Have they asked the Albritons to do this as well?
I have no idea. But if they're going to put 100% into that account, I would think that they wouldn't be wanting to pay the Albritons at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, we have a motion and a second. Any questions from the public in view of this exchange? Any objection to the motion? Motion carried unanimously. Thank you.
Item number 5 is another request to escrow. This one is by Matador Resources, and this is a traditional escrow request. It's associated with a concursus proceeding that was filed in Bossier Parish, and it's titled Callon Petroleum versus State of Louisiana. Matador is the payer, and they have requested authority to escrow these funds. They do have statutory authority to escrow, but there is a provision in our lease in paragraph 18 that requires board approval also. So just to make sure that there's no conflict between the statutory authority and the requirements in the lease, they have requested to escrow those funds. And again, we would have the same provisions, that the funds be placed into an interest-bearing account, in a Louisiana institution. In this case, it'll be with the clerk of court. Matador must continue to provide SR9 royalty reporting forms and copies of the deposits made into the escrow account until a final decision is made on this case. Staff does recommend authorizing Matador to escrow.
What's the pleasure, Board?
Make a motion to accept staff's recommendations.
Honorable moves staff recommendations. Second. Thank you, Mr. Darrell Smith, for the second. Any comment from the public on the motion? Any comment from the board on the motion? Any questions? Any objection to the motion? Motion here, none. Motion carried unanimously.
Item number six.
I'm sorry, it's after 11 o'clock, and I would entertain a motion to recess for a regularly scheduled business. Ms. Smith moves. Mr. Arnold second. Any objection? Recess. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and call the regular meeting of the State Mineral and Energy Board to order and ask the staff to call roll.
Mr. Angel?
Here.
Mr. Segura?
Here.
Mr. Arnold? Mr. Cordero?
Here.
Mr. Diaz?
Here.
Mr. Ingram? Mr. Ingram's present. Mr. Morton?
Here.
Mr. Sanders?
Present.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Graves?
Here.
We have 11 members present and a quorum.
We entertain a motion to recess to get back into the legal entitled controversy committee. Motion by Arnold, second by Smith. Any objection? Hearing none, that motion is adopted.
Reconvene the legal entitled, Ms. April. Next item, please.
Item number six is another request to escrow royalty funds. This request was made by Exco Operating Company, not a traditional request. Again, this is a case that is not dealing with the concursus. This is a petition to annul a tax sale. It's entitled Kenneth Webb versus DNR et al. Again, a little bit different because there actually is no statutory authority for them to escrow. We do recommend allowing them to until this dispute can be settled. They are trying to annul a tax sale from 1936.
And we do have a lease on this property, so we're asking them to escrow the amount of the royalty that would be on our lease until this particular case is settled.
What's the pleasure? Mr. Arnold, you move? Thank you. Move to accept staff recommendation. Mr. Cordero is second. Any discussion by the board? Discussion from the public or questions from the public? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay. Item number seven is the DeSoto school board lease that was on the agenda last month, which was the odd bid, not making the required one-half rental. The board directed the staff to meet with all parties, the DeSoto Parish School Board, plus the other two school boards that were involved, the lessee Suncoast and its company that Suncoast was brokering for, which is Chesapeake. We staff did that, and a compromise was worked out to it. There were some corrections to the lease. They were not substantial corrections. They were, in fact, notarial acts of correction for inadvertent errors that were put into the lease form. And it also required the signature of all three school boards, which had not been done originally. There is an act of correction that has been done. It is being signed. We haven't gotten the full signed pages yet, but one of the school boards had a meeting last night, so we'll get the final signed pages for the act of correction. And so with the act of correction and the original lease, all parties are in agreement that the lease is to their liking, so to speak. Everybody's getting the amount of money they want. The school boards are getting the land leased as they want. And so the staff is going to recommend, this again is on the docket as a lease to be approved by the board, as all agency leases must. So we are asking again that this item be approved with the act of correction, which is not, again, a substantial change in the lease, approved subject to the collection of all the signature pages from the appropriate school boards, which is being done.
I have a question, Mr. Hick.
Yes, sir.
Just so the record will be clear, the board or the staff here specifically, did not have any part in creating these problems that we're having to deal with here today. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
This resulted from outside handling by...
by an agency, by the school board. That's correct.
And we're doing the appropriate thing to clean it up and deal
with it. We are trying to satisfy all the parties, all the school boards, get money for their kids, trying to make it legal.
My question is not disparaging to
the
parties. I just want to be sure that it's clear this is a problem we're just having to deal with.
That's correct.
Thank you.
So great job. You did a great job. And as I said last time when we discussed this issue, the world changed from August of 2008 to October of 2008. Y'all recall, you know, when we were getting $32,000 a lease, and then after the national economy imploded, we didn't have bids.
That's correct.
We almost got real close to that same situation. In this situation, if we wouldn't have provided leadership last time because of what happened both Friday and Monday with regards to the national economy, who knows what would happen if we had to put this thing out.
How
school
about
board.
Today? How about today also?
Well, I'm not sure what happened today. You can tell the guys that got money. 400 points to me doesn't mean anything, Mr. Andrew. Would you explain?
Yeah.
You can't afford to explain. I got you. But anyway, good job because everybody got what they wanted, and I think the staff did a great job.
I'm in waiting for a motion. You have a motion? Thank you. Any discussion of Mr. Angel's motion? Any objection to Mr. Angel's motion? Any public discussion? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Okay, item number 8 is the item that we added to the agenda. It's a request by Walter Oil and Gas to enter into to negotiate an operating agreement. In this particular case, Walter Oil and Gas drilled a well. Then they took the rig and tried to drill another well. They thought they could drill it before they had to complete this well. If they had completed this well, it was a gas well. They could have had it qualified as commercially productive by this office and been allowed to pay shut-in payment. Unfortunately, it was not qualified by this office because the company thought it could get back to this lease with the rig, complete the well, and test it, and then get it to our office. But in drilling the second well, which is on the Rockefeller Wildlife Refuge, they ran into permitting problems, which delayed everything. And so they're at a point right now where they have a well drilled. It's in a unit that includes two leases, and they're about to lose it. So they're asking for an operating agreement that would cover the grounds of those two leases, which would be drained by the lease. They're in the process right now, actually, of constructing a pipeline, which will allow them to produce this well. They've spent a ton of money on the well, and they're spending a ton of money on the pipeline. The staff would request of the board for authority to negotiate an operating agreement with Walter Oil and Gas so they could get this well on production and get us some royalty.
Mr. Arnold moves to approve staff's recommendation. Mr. Darrell Smith seconds. Any discussion and questions of staff? We fully protected in this situation here?
Excuse me?
The state is fully protected in this approach?
Oh, yes, sir. And we certainly are.
Thank
and
you.
Actually, it's Wildlife and Fisheries.
It's an agency.
Yeah.
We're acting as their facilitator.
Right.
Any public comment or questions? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion approved unanimously.
Okay. Other items are in executive session.
Thank you. Moved, Mr. Arnold, executive. Second, Mr. Segura. Any objection? Executive session.
No, I can wait.
Okay.
We're done. I mean,
we just have to wrap it up. Right?
Yeah.
Finish. Close out.
Give our authority to negotiate. Really all we need.
Motion.
Make a motion, come to open session.
Second. Need a second? Second. Mr. Segura, second. The objection? Coming out of executive session. Reconvening legal entitlement.
Yes, sir. On item number 9, the staff is requesting authority for its attorney of record to negotiate with Pennzoil and its successors on an oral revaluation and findings. Just for authority to negotiate.
Pleasure of the board. Mr. Arnold?
I move to accept.
Thank you.
Approve.
Ms. Smith, seconds. Any questions or comments from the board concerning authority for staff to negotiate? Any public input or questions? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously.
Item number 10, again, on the three cases involved, which were discussed in executive session, the staff, again, is asking for authority for the Attorney General's office as its attorney to negotiate settlements, if possible, for those three cases.
Move the grant authority.
Mr. Arnold moves.
Second.
Mr. Thomas Smith, second. Any comment on the motion from the public? Hearing none. Any comment from the board? Hearing none. Any objection? Hearing none. Unanimous. Carries.
Last item, which is a continuation from last month, it doesn't have to be, it was just tabled last month, so it's not a new agenda item, is ongoing negotiations in an area involved in the Bayou Pierre Wildlife Management Area, specifically areas involved, partially of which are involved in litigation for declaratory judgment. The staff would request authority to continue to negotiate with the parties involved in that issue.
I move.
Ms. Smith moves
to support
staff recommendation. Mr. Arnold, second. Any comment from the public concerning this item of business? Any board comment? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is unanimously adopted.
And I think that concludes the legal entitled agenda.
Anybody want to recess this? Arnold moves and Ms. Smith seconds. Any objection? Thank you. We're adjourned. Thank you, Ms. April. Thank you. We're back to regular business here now. You been flying, lady? Get in here.
I'll do it. Let's just say I know. The Docket Review Committee will come to order and call the roll. Mr. Angel?
Yes.
Mr. Paul Segura?
Yes.
Mr. Arnold?
Yes.
Cardora?
Here.
Ingram?
Yes.
Mr. Martin?
Yes.
Mr. Sanders?
Present.
Darrell Smith?
Yes.
Helen Smith?
Here.
Gary Graves? We have a quorum. Mr. Arnold's going to take it. We had a high-level meeting back here.
Thank you, Mr. Diaz. We do have a quorum. I'd like to hear from the staff's report on the docket.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
The staff of the Petroleum Lands Division of the Office of Mineral Resources has reviewed those items requiring board approval for the August 10th, 2011 Docket Review Committee and recommends the following. For Category A, state agency leases, please approve item number 1, subject to the receipt of fully executed copies of the Act of Correction. Please approve item number 2. For Category B, state lease transfers, please approve items number 1 through items number 9. Item 10, approved subject to the approval of the Governor of Louisiana. Please approve items number 11 through items number 13. Item 14, approved subject to the approval of the Governor of Louisiana. Items 15 through 17, please approve. Item 17, approved subject to the approval of the Governor of Louisiana. For items 19 through 20, please approve. Category C, Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, State Agency Lease Transfers. Please approve items number 1 through items number 3. For Category D, Advertised Proposals, please approve items number 1 through items number 6. And this completes the staff's recommendations to the document.
On Category B, you meant items 19 through 30, correct?
Oh, I did. I'm sorry. 19 through 30.
Okay.
Please approve.
You've heard the staff's recommendations. Have a motion to approve. Move by Mr. Segura, second by Mrs. Smith. Any comments or questions from the committee? Any from the public? Anyone opposed? Hearing none opposed, it is approved. And we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, at this time, I'd like to convene the regular board meeting, reconvene the regular board meeting. Do I have a motion to come out of recess? Mm-hmm. Motion by Mr. Arnold, second by Ms. Smith. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. We're back in regular session. Could you, we already called the roll. Item 2, I guess, is the approval of the July 13th, 2011 minutes. I have a motion by Mr. Arnold, second by Ms. Smith. Any public comment on those minutes? Any questions by the board? If not, all in favor? All opposed? The motion carries. At this time, item 3, adoption of the committee recommendations. A, lease review committee. B, nomination track committee. C, audit committee. D, legal and title controversy committee. And E, docket review committee. Are there any questions or discussion on those committee recommendations?
I move acceptance.
We have a motion by Ms. Smith for acceptance of those five committee recommendations. We have a second by Mr. Arnold. Any public comment on those recommendations of the committees? Any further questions or comments by the board? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? The motion carries. At this time, I believe we're ready for our technical briefing, so we need to go back in the executive session.
I move that we go into executive
session. We have a motion by Ms. Smith, second by Mr. Arnold. All in favor? All opposed? We're in slight recess. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you very much.
We need to go ahead and reconvene the August 10th meeting, and we would go to entertain a motion to return out of executive session. Motion by Mr. Sanders, second by Mr. Arnold. Any objections, any discussion? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. Item 5, awarding of the leases. Mr. Vaughn.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On track number 42210, this is a multiple acceptable bid with an apparent overlap. As a result, we recommend accepting the bid of Bellard and Company Incorporated as to the bid of Anadarko Exploration and Production After we finalize the property descriptions, we recommend that Anadarko be granted an option to take the remaining property of its bid minus any property bid by Ballard and Company at Anadarko's bid price. On track number 42243, this was an exclusive seismic agreement. We're recommending that the bid of Synergy Incorporated be rejected for improper bid. As to the remaining tracks receiving bids, we're recommending that those bids be accepted. That concludes my recommendation.
Okay, we entertain a motion to approve the staff recommendations. Motion by Arnold, second by Segura. Any objections? Any discussions? Hearing none, the motion is adopted. Item 6, update on the request for information.
On the seismic, sir.
I'm sorry. Okay, I would go ahead and entertain a motion to extend the agenda to consider a opening to the public on what is referred to as a floor bid or a geophysical bid.
I move.
Motion by Segura.
Second.
Second by Sanders to extend the agenda, which would be now item 6, which would be to authorize a floor bid on a geophysical bid. Any discussion on that motion? Any opposition? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. So item 6 now is to go ahead. I will open up the floor for bid on track number 42243.
Mr. Harper, I'm Clay Johnson. I represent Zenergy, Inc.
Not on my best day, am I, Mr. Harper? Not on my best day.
Okay.
But I do appreciate that. No, you're doing exactly what you were supposed to do. I just want to make sure for the record that I don't want to hurt Mr. Harper's reputation.
I'm looking at the sign in front of you.
You're doing everything you need to do. This is not about you and me. This is about Mr. Harper's impeccable character. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm Clay Johnson. I represent Zenergy, Inc., and who made the initial bid in this matter. I would like to resubmit the initial bid, but with the change that the term of the geophysical permit be 18 months with a 6-month option.
Okay, so you are interested in submitting a bid for 18-month term with a 6-month option. On track number 42243, would you state the company name and the bonus per acre and the cash bonus?
Yes, sir. It's a geophysical permit. The official tract is 42243. The bidder is Zenergy, Inc. for 100% of that tract. The term is 18 months with a 6-month option. The bonus is $42.80 per acre for a total amount of $137,174.
Okay. And before I go on to allow for any other bidders, have you been satisfied that the bidder is registered as appropriately with the Secretary of State?
Yes, sir. Staff has checked it and verified it.
Let me mention also that there are some additional consideration paragraphs attached to the original bid by Zenergy, Inc., and we would renew those additional consideration paragraphs as a part of this bid.
Okay. So if you would perhaps hand that to me, or do we have a copy of that, staff? You do? Okay, I'm sorry. We have a copy of it. Okay, so your bid includes also those particular considerations. Mr. Heck, in the past, I know that from time to time you would require something from a prospective bidder on their letterhead that would indicate that the person making the representation has the authority to do so. Do you feel like you need that in this case?
In this case, no, because we have been dealing with Mr. Johnson prior to this, in setting up this exclusive geophysical
okay.
on behalf of the
All right. All right. So we will now entertain from anyone else in the audience, or anyone else, a competitive bid, and I will allow for anyone to step forward and make that bid at this point. And having asked once, I'll go ahead and ask a second time. Anyone interested in making a competitive bid on track number 42243, will please step forward now. And having asked twice, I'll ask a third time. Anyone interested in offering a competitive bid on track number 42243 to do so now? Having provided sufficient time and sufficient opportunity and no one stepping forward, at this particular point in time, I would move that we would, I would entertain a motion that we would go ahead and close the opportunity for folks to come
Sanders,
forward.
Close it.
So Mr. Sanders moves to close, and Ms. Smith moves to second that motion. And is there any discussion on the motion, any objections to that motion? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. Having said that, under the awarding of the leases, has staff been able to review the consideration, and has staff been able to review the stipulations that are attached to it, and does staff make a recommendation on the bid that was previously received?
The bid previously received during the opening of the bids meeting, or this bid?
The bid that was just received, but it had some stipulations on it that came from the documentation that was previously
correct.
Provided.
The additional consideration was read into the record when the bids were originally submitted. When the bid was originally submitted by Zenergy, and we, after reviewing the bid from the floor, we recommend that the bid of Zenergy be accepted.
Okay, we got a motion by staff
with the addendum.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yes, sir. Thank you for saying that.
Move.
Motion
Sanders.
By Sanders, second by Segura. Any objections? Any discussions? Hearing none, motion is adopted. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Now revised item number 7, updating the RFI.
Members, in your packet, you each have a copy of the report I prepared regarding your request for information from last month about the audit procedures. I'll just briefly hit the highlights, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. As you recall, this is in response to a legislative performance audit that was done last year. After we reviewed the documentation and looked at the audits that we had done this year and that are in process, had done last year and are in process in this fiscal year, it turns out there are actually 94 companies that have not been subjected to a field audit and are not scheduled to be subjected to a field audit, and those companies paid over the last 10 years, an average of $3,250 a year each. We have one company on the list that will be scheduled in the 2012-2013 audit cycle. We considered three different alternatives available for additional auditing. One would be additional staff. With the current budget situation, it's unlikely that the state would increase our staff size, so an option there would be perhaps to enroll in the LSU internship program, where LSU places accounting students, upper-level accounting students, with businesses in the vicinity of the Baton Rouge campus to work for the companies for a year period of time. And we have found that, in my experience with the Legislative Auditor's Office, we found that these were high-quality, capable individuals who were able to contribute. and that is a possibility for additional staff. We also researched contract services. There's a couple of caveats regarding contract services. First of all, our cooperative endeavor agreement that we have with the Department of Revenue prohibits us from contracting out any of the severance tax audits, so we would only be able to contract out the royalty portion. The other caveat is that the Louisiana and Texas state accountancy laws provide that auditing on a contingency fee basis is not legal, so it would have to be fee-based services. It couldn't be contingency. And third, we would have to consider whether the companies that we contracted with had any conflicts of interest, whether they did business with other oil and gas companies that may compromise their independence regarding performing our audits. And finally, we would want the audits to be performed in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards and by licensed CPAs to ensure the highest ethical standards and the highest quality of work. Some companies we found that had some interest were Equity Metrics, Reese Energy Consulting, AMS PAR, and in your packet is listed pros and cons of each of these companies that we found. In addition, we have listed technology solutions. As I mentioned last month, we have previously purchased an auditing package called ACL. The staff is being trained on that in the next couple of weeks. We spent about $81,000 on this package, and we have yet to fully implement it because of the training. An alternative package is IDEA. It's very similar to ACL. It's also computerized auditing. And my recommendation is that at this time to allow the staff time to implement the expenditures that we've already incurred and see how those pan out and expand our audits and provide us to enlarge the scope of our audits before we consider expending anything else on. And as you know, with all investments, there's a point of diminishing returns, and we would not want to go past that point with our auditing investments.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Well said. What I would like to be able to do is have that document referred over to the Legislative Auditor's Office as well as the Attorney General's Office. I would like to meet with them. Obviously, the Legislative Auditor's Office has a different take on what we have been doing, and I want to make sure that they believe that we are now at the highest standards with this investment in this additional software. And if not, to get their input on that. So at this particular point in time, it was only provided for the information. I appreciate the staff providing that, and I will visit with the Attorney General and the Legislative Auditor's Office on that. Okay. Item number 8, perhaps, would be announcements.
The total for today's lease sale is $647,263.67. which brings our fiscal year total to a little over $4.8 million. I also want to announce one last time, our annual oil and gas conference is coming up in about 3 weeks. It'll be at the Roosevelt Hotel in New Orleans. And finally, each of the board members has been provided with a copy of a news article that's on the DNR website. It's got a lot of interesting information about oil and gas activity in the state.
Very good. Any other announcements? That's what somebody asks me every day when they see me. Any announcements today? Anything. Okay, very good. You're not running for anything? Right. You figured it out, huh? Yeah, it seemed to like. Motion to adjourn. Motion by Smith. Second by Ingram to adjourn. Any objections? Hearing none, that motion is adopted.